Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Sister Empress Filet Chiyomesu. And this is a special edition of our New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation programming. It's a special edition because of several reasons. One, of course, this is now what is known as Black Music Month. And with that said, in the background, we are listening to none other than Art Blakely. If you're not familiar with him, no matter what your age is, certainly this is the best that music can possibly get. Art Blakely. This is Black Music Month, and this is Black music at its best. During the course of this month, we will be featuring a lot of artists just to kind of remind you and for some to introduce to you some of our greatest Black musicians, vocalists, musicians, artists, lyricists, all types of music we're going to be covering for this entire month. But tonight we're going to talk more than just about music. We're going to talk about a topic that we oftentimes talk about, and that, of course, is the injustices that are found here in the U.S. of A. And certainly you don't have to go far to find that. All you have to do is look outside your door and sometimes right inside your home. At any rate, we're going to be adding a new segment to our regular weekly broadcast. We may not cover that particular topic every week, but certainly a couple of times out of the month, you will hear us talk more about what's going on with the prison system, the so-called jurisprudence for some, the penal system for many others. We're going to talk more about that because it's so very important to understand what the plan is for many Black folks and or their families or friends or loved ones. Certainly looking at prison bars is not going to be something you're going to be able to get away from in one way or another. We know that because we do the research, the analysis that really helps us to know. And certainly many of you are doing research and other kinds of things to help give you information and insight as well. So you know exactly what I'm saying, what I'm talking about. Some of you, of course, have in fact experienced having to deal with law enforcement. Whose law? And certainly the types of enforcement is really geared to who and why. Well, those are some of the things that we're going to start exploring more. And tonight we are going to talk about Black women in incarceration, the projection of more Black children being adjudicated, of course, the prison industrialized complex. And with that, the treatment or the mistreatment that you find inside of these prisons, and of course we're talking about human rights violations. We're also talking about what some call re-entry. My question is always, what are they re-entering back into? And needless to say, we would be remiss if we did not talk about political prisoners. So tonight's program, again, is a new segment that we are focusing on, and it has to do with incarceration, prisons, what we also know as the peculiar institution in the 21st century. We're going to talk live a little later on with someone who has experienced both the prison and, of course, reentry, and now is the owner-operator of a construction company in Trenton, New Jersey, as well as he's a TV host and many other things. Also, an author wrote a book called From the Block to the Boardroom. We're going to be talking with Tracy Syfax a little later on. We're going to also give you a Mumia Abu-Jamal update, and we're going to talk a bit about Dr. Motulu Shakur as well, because we have a few projects that's relevant to both of these two political prisoners. Well, to say, again, it being June, and for many, what is known as Black Music Month, tonight we're featuring Art Blakely. And for those who are not familiar with him, we're going to give you a little history about Art Blakely. Again, for this month, we're going to be focusing on what some may call the old and some may call the new, and what we call as just good Black music. No matter what the era, no matter what the type, it's like something like nothing else when you talk about Black music. And so, again, we're going to highlight several artists for this month and share with you some of the information we've been able to get. And hopefully you all will be able to share some information with us as well. All right, before we get ready to go to our live line, what we're going to do is kind of give you some information that we really just obtained yesterday. Mr. Louis Farrakhan was in the Philadelphia area yesterday, and not just Philadelphia area, he was in Philly, period. But he will be in the tri-state area during the course of this week. As a matter of fact, I believe he's going to be in New York this weekend coming. And so, again, had the opportunity to hear and greet Mr. Farrakhan yesterday. It was kind of the formal, yes, yet informal announcement for the upcoming Million Man March 20-year anniversary celebration. It sounds like it's going to be really interesting, and I think it's going to be somewhat dynamic for many, many reasons. One, although it is the celebration, the observance of the Million Man March that took place, of course, in 1995, this one is geared, again, to the entire family, meaning women are invited, children are invited. This, to me, is a little different from what was attempted a few years back. I think maybe in 2000, it was something called the Million Family March. And then after that, maybe 2005, I think it was the Millions More movement. Well, I think this is a little different because this really attempts to focus on very specific issues. It did those years as well, but those last events, as I mentioned, the family and the Millions More, was a bit more celebratory, meaning, you know, it was more coming together and being somewhat festive and things like that. But this one coming up is, I believe, directed specifically to and about the injustices that is happening in this country. In fact, the theme for this year's commemoration of the Million Man March is Justice or Else. Now, that to me suggests something a little more serious than the Million Family March and or the Millions More movement. And again, in seeing Mr. Farrakhan yesterday, I strongly felt that it's definitely about looking at and addressing some of the specific concerns that is taking place in our country today, or this country today. I'm going to say in our communities today, because he did talk about, you know, economics in such a way that we stop spending our money with other people. This has been said quite a bit on numerous occasions by various people, but how that is going to be done has not been conveyed by most, I think, with this particular gathering that the opportunity or the feasibility of it happening is real. He also talked about the relationship between the United States and, of course, the Muslim world, and was very, very candid about what he felt was an intentional, not just felt, but what he conveyed very strongly, that there's an intentional attack on the Muslim world by the United States. And he made it very clear that he was in unity with all of the Muslim countries, and if something happened to one country, more or less, he felt that that should be something that all Muslim countries should be addressing. So, again, there was a call out yesterday for solidarity as well as action, okay? And so, again, I think for October the 10th, that is going to prove to be another historical gathering, but perhaps even more importantly, I think people might be a little more prepared this time to really take some other kinds of actions or do some other kind of actions upon returning from the October 10th gathering. Well, we shall see. Needless to say, I know on my end, we're certainly going to be ready both to go and to when we come back. But at any rate, what we want to do now is just kind of give you that overview, and I'll be giving you some other information. For example, one of the groups that I will be personally working with is something called Sisters in Support of the Million Man March 20. There is an email address that I will share with you later in the event that you would like to get more information about that particular group. Again, it's Sisters in Support of the Million Man March 20. And the email address is sisinsupportmmm20@gmail.com. And, of course, that stands for Sisters in Support of the Million Man March 20 year anniversary. That's what it. That's what that email pretty much represents. Anyway, we'll give it out to you. We'll give it out to you a little later on as well. But again, we want to tell you that the Million Man March 20 year anniversary is coming. Of course, the date is November 10th, and we want to talk more about it as we proceed, because I've been getting some feedback, both pro and con, about it. You know, some who've said, you know, enough of the marches, enough of this and that, you know, we've done that, that's not a solution, and so forth and so on. And my response to that is, it's not about it trying to be a solution. But, you know, at some point I want to hear what some of you feel about that, what you have to say about it. And as we proceed, as we lead up to October, we're going to have a lot of conversation and dialogue about it. So we're certainly going to welcome all of you to share some of your views about what you feel about the upcoming 20-year anniversary observance of the Million Man March, it being, again, the theme, Justice or Else. That is the theme. Okay, we are now waiting for our guests to call in, and hopefully he will be calling in soon. But in the meantime, let me see what we're going to do here. I want to give you, I guess, the Mumia Abu-Jamal update. I was able to talk with Sister Pam yesterday, and the main thing that needs to be conveyed is that there's still a tremendous need for folk to get involved, to continue to contact the prison, to contact, really, the new governor of Pennsylvania, and that's Tom Wolf is his name. And the reason being because the governor has capability to intervene in issues such as these. And so people are asking, or people are being asked, to call, contact the governor's office in order for the medical team that has been put together for Mumia, that the medical team is able to provide the services that is needed for Mumia at this time. There are areas that a specialist need to address with Mumia. And unfortunately, the prison people, correction people, whatever they call it, are not allowing the doctors to see Mumia, and now are not even letting the doctors review any updates on his charts, meaning Mumia went back to the hospital a week or so ago. There were some additional tests that were given, and, you know, they're not releasing information as to what the results was for the test. So, again, it's important that our people get involved, continue to call the prisons, continue to call all the people who are connected to this craziness, and demand that Mumia is able to be visited, to be seen by the doctors who have been selected specifically for him to deal with the various maladies that he has, one being diabetes, the other being some kind of skin problem that is just, terrible, very, very bad, very bad. And apparently it's something that is going around inside of that prison. So, again, we're going to give you more information about that. There's a campaign that's going to be kicking off here in Philly. I did mention it to the minister yesterday, or rather gave him some information that talked about a group that we're putting together here in Philly called African Community Voices for Mumia. And again, it's a twofold thing. One, we want the doctors to be able to see him immediately, and two, to work towards his overall freedom. So, again, we'll be giving you more information about that, because we'll be taking that campaign nationwide. But for right now, we're focusing specifically on Philadelphia. Now, here in Philly, there will be an event on, the 14th of June, known as Odun Day. It is a very large event that happens here in Philadelphia. It's an annual event. It's probably been going on for about 40 years now. So we plan to be out there with information to let people know that they need to sign a petition, or they need to call, or do whatever. If, in fact, the doctors have not been able to get in by then, we plan to be out in the streets to make certain that the masses of our people know that they need to take some action and why. So, again, if you are in the Philadelphia area on June the 14th, we will be down near the South Street area around 23rd. We'll be out there in the afternoon giving out flyers, providing other kinds of information about Mumia Abu-Jamal and some other things that we'll also tell you about in terms of the Million Women Movement and its human rights project, as well as now the programs that will be available for women who are coming out of prison. We now have something that is ready for them, that is specifically designed for them. And, family, I think you're going to really, really like what we're doing. Our product is now out called Bars for Freedom, and you can obtain them presently at the UNIA, located at 53rd and Girard Avenue. It is our introductory product, and again, it's called Bars for Freedom. And it's a natural soap, or natural soaps with all types of fragrances, all natural, natural oils are used in it, and so forth and so on. And the proceeds from these soaps, or part of the proceeds, go towards our prison program that we are initiating for our sisters, as well as some other related projects related to the prison. So, again, if you're in the Philadelphia area, you can go to 5300 Girard Avenue, West Girard Avenue, the UNIA, it's Division 178. They have the product there, and the product sells for only $3. That's a discount price for normally what it is. It's a high-quality product, and again, in about 10 different fragrances, and those fragrances are all natural, all pure ingredients, and they're going quickly, they're moving quickly. But the point being is that we're letting folks know that we are taking action and being prepared to do the services that we talked about and now have began initiating. So again, we will have the product when we're in Mississippi, I believe June 25th. We'll be in Mississippi for a few days, and we'll be doing something called our Women in White, a part of the African Women Gather. And we'll also be in Newark in July for the commemoration of the first Black Power Conference. And also, we will be holding a Black Women's Power Conference. And at that time, we'll also do the Women in White as well as some other very, very powerful things that will get us ready for the national convention, Black Women's Convention, political convention. It'll be taking place next year in September. Okay, that's pretty much some of the reports that we wanted to provide to you. Before we get ready to bring on the guests for this evening, what we want to do is hear some comments from you all, particularly as it pertains to, one, if you have something to share with us for Black Music Month, we certainly welcome that. And also, of course, if you have something you want to share with us about injustices as it pertains to the prison, in the prison system, shall we say. We know that there are horrendous things that go on inside of the prisons. And now for sisters, we want to be able to make certain that they can tell those stories and we can share and bring that information to the forefront for them, because oftentimes they cannot do it for themselves. We now have units that we're putting together to be able to do that. But also, if any of you have experienced some of these atrocities that happen in these prisons. We know for certain that many of our people have been incarcerated who were purely innocent, which meant nothing to the system. We also know that it's really now about money, and these people want to make money off of us any way they possibly can. And so we've got to now help our people to know and better understand why this is happening. So, again, if you have something you want to share with us in terms of a story that you have or something that you have experienced, or, you know, a possible solution or anything else that's relevant to the prison industrialized complex, human rights violations, the atrocities, the treatment, the lack of health care, that's something to talk about, programs that help want to improve their being, things of that nature. And note, family, I know sometimes it may seem like there's a major emphasis being placed on the women. Well, there needs to be, especially right about now, because when you do the analysis, you will find that while all of it is, against us, there are some things now that are specifically geared to the women. And when you do the comparative analysis of what's going on in the men's prisons and you look at the women's prisons, one thing is for certain. Rape exists in both prison systems. There's no question about it. But it is more likely for a female, a woman, to be raped by particularly the correction, so-called correction people, you see. So there's a lot of things that we really have to deal with and stop pushing underneath the carpet. The other thing, too, that's very interesting, then we're going to go to our lines, is that when you look at the prison system when it comes to the so-called programs, when it comes to the things that are available that are supposed to be to help you while you're in, and that's not even talking about coming out, well, I can tell you there is a major inequality with that. There are programs within some of these prisons, and don't think that I'm trying to make it seem like they're all so good or anything like that. No, not at all. But at the same time, there are some things there in some of these so-called institutions, and when you, again, do the comparison, when it comes to the women, it's not there, okay? So we've got to make sure if we're going to fight this thing in prison reform, if we're going to fight abolishment are the death penalty and other things relevant to the prison. We also better be fighting for these sisters, too, who oftentimes have children, remember? And that's why, again, it's so important that we understand what's going on. It's almost like getting two birds with one stone now. But we'll talk more about that shortly. Let's do this. Let's go to our live line and let's bring in one of our callers to share some information. And let's see, we're going to go to caller at 8521. We're going to open up your mic and welcome to the special edition of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. 8521, your mic is open.
Peace, progress, and peace, power, and progress, my President General.
Oh, greetings, sister. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just getting in basically from going out to, which we do on a weekly basis, go out to the halfway houses and speak to the men and women that's halfway home. So I'm basically getting in and tuning into your call. I'm just sitting
okay.
in the car right now listening in. How's everybody?
Okay. So when you say they're halfway home, that is, be more specific. What exactly does
well,
that
they,
mean?
Well, they're in a halfway house, sent, you know, from prison to do the rest of their time in,
okay.
in
okay.
these halfway houses, which is
gotcha.
Supposed to be
gotcha.
Community education centers.
Okay.
And we go there. We have an alumni group that go and speak to the men and women on a weekly basis, three times a week. So I'm just getting in. But just to chime in on the conversation, yes, indeed, a female, formerly incarcerated female. I am 18 years out of incarceration and been on the front line fighting for the restoration and the human rights, not only for all prisoners, but, you know, I'm concentrating on our women and our youth because now the women have become the fastest growing population that is entering into prison at an alarming
mm-hmm.
rate. And then so are they are taking our young children. And we had a campaign back in 99 that we started, but, you know, some of the
mm-hmm.
people kind of like, you know, drifted away. But
mm-hmm.
it was called Mothers in Prison, Children in Crisis, and now I call it Mothers in Prison, Children and Families in Crisis, because
mm-hmm.
the women are the primary caretakers of the family,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and the nurturers of the home, and of course, you know, we've been that, you know, from the womb. And
mm-hmm.
to the tomb, you know, our nurturers of our families and the community. And there's not enough conversation, awareness,
mm-hmm.
or gender-specific programs, you know, that people are talking about to address, you know, the women that's
mm-hmm.
incarcerated and coming home facing double and a triple whammy. You know, not only are they being in prison or jail, but they also lose their children the minute they
right.
become arrested. And
right.
DIFAS and the health family services, wherever, they take the children the minute the female enter and get arrested. So, and not only that, when they get out, you know, welfare, you know, and a lot of women are in prison, you know, for lower-level crime. You know, the crack
mm-hmm.
epidemic and the war on drugs was basically the war on black women. Because
mm-hmm,
during
mm-hmm.
that time, you know, women were selling their babies and, you know, put there to transport drugs and, you know, traffic drugs for their male counterparts, and you know, it's just a terrible situation. But these are the things, you know, along with Black Women Defense League, the Million Woman Movement, and also Creed Power Women Empowerment Network, which I started when I got out of prison. You know, even though, you know, I'm doing it with limited resources, we
mm-hmm.
are addressing these issues, and we're making sure that not only us, will address these issues. But we're calling on everybody, you know, to, you know, speak, say her name, you know, talk about the tragic situations that women face when they're incarcerated. When I was incarcerated, I witnessed, you know, women there, you know, accessory to crimes that they were, you know, with their boyfriends or husbands. Women had to defend themselves because they was in abusive relationships. Women that was incarcerated because they, you know, had social problems, you know, such as, you know, drug addiction and stuff that led them to crime and to degenerate to crime and violence and all these other different, you know, components that, you know, women get into because of being in this traumatic situation. So it's like a, it's like, you know, distress and oppression and people resorting to certain, kind of like, you know, like overcome these type of things. They resort to drugs and alcohol and all this type of stuff as a, you know, something to, how should I say it? Something to Novocaine, to numb the situation.
Right.
You know, and we just gotta, you know, and our brothers, you know, we need our black men, you know, because if a man is not fit to stand up for a woman, they're not fit to live. Personally, that's how I say it, because every man, woman, every man or woman is here by a woman. You know. So if you can't stand up for your mothers, the mothers of human civilization, you know, you ain't fit to be respected. If you're not here to protect us and do all, you know, do what you're supposed to do and maintain, you know, your women and your children, you know, it's just a sad day. You know, and we need our brothers. We need our men, our fathers in our home, our brothers in our home, our uncles. We need them to protect us and create safe havens for the women and the girls. We need that.
Well, you know, sister, it's interesting because it's similar. That's something similar to what Mr. Farrakhan said last night, or rather yesterday morning, rather, that, you know, if men don't stand up and do the right thing in protecting the women, that they really are not men. And he was pretty interesting, some of the things that he shared or some of the things that he conveyed at that session yesterday. One of the things that we are going to do in terms of the Million Women Movement is around the so-called Father's Day time period, we will begin kind of giving some information that we are planning to do a formal kind of plea, for lack of a better word, for the Million Man March 20-year anniversary observance. We will be literally issuing in writing, and it will also be published in other venues and maybe even said or announced on that day. I'm not sure yet. But the plea to our men, to our brothers, is going to be that as women, we are demanding that they stand up to better protect, defend the black woman, the mother of civilization. And this will be formally done. This will be in writing. It will be issued in every kind of way possible. And it will be the women, the sisters, that will be saying this to the brothers as a part of the Million Man March 20-year anniversary observing. This is going to be very, very powerful. And the brothers are not going to be able to say that the sisters did not come to them and ask them for their support, their help, and to stand up as men and better protect our women and girls and children, but specifically our women and girls.
Indeed. Indeed. You know, so, you know, my call to action, you know, and even though, you know, we do have, you know, sisters who are subjugated, you know, for whatever reason, in terms of you know, taking their rightful places in society and standing up for the issues that affect us most importantly, you know, they got to be held accountable too, you know, as well, you know, and you know, from my experience, like, you know, from being in a single parent home, you know, my father took flight and, you know, I'm the only female and I got all brothers, you know, I got firsthand, you know, in regards to, you know, knowing that, you know, if it was for, you know, my father being in my home, I probably would have been, you know, I probably wouldn't even fell through or degenerated or got caught up in the product of my environment if I had, you know, my father there to show me how or what it was to be the type of man that, you know, his daughter should have, you know, had or whatever type of situation. Or mm-hmm, I wouldn't have mm-hmm. to resort to going out into the street seeing my mother struggle, you know, to make ends meet, you know, and having to leave out at an early age trying to, you know, be a breadwinner at an early age to help, you know, help my mother to maintain yeah. a household without a father. So, you know, it's traumatic, you know, it's a traumatic situation. And I think, you know, we got to do better. You know, that situation from back then, we got to do better than what our parents, you know, showed us back in the past. We got to begin to turn use those stepping stools as and triumph from those type of things. So we got to be better. If we know better, we do better. So, you know, I just
absolutely.
Thank God that 18 years since being released in 1997, when I went to the Million Women's March, when I came home in February, and that's how we got connected. And I've been with MWM and the Black Women Defense League when I came home from out of incarceration.
Wow.
I've been struggling for the human rights for people returning home, and also mm-hmm. Addressing, you know, women issues of being incarceration and at risk. 18 years doing this. You know, 18 years. So I know I
wow.
want to serve as an inspiration, you know, and instill
wow.
hope, not only into our sisters, but I also go speak to the brothers. And I have brothers
mm-hmm,
who,
mm-hmm.
you know, are younger than me who almost fell through the cracks, you know. And by me leading by experience, you know, and changing my life, you know, from where in which I, you know, incarceration and
mm-hmm.
the drug life and, you know, initiating a gang of women. You know, these are some of the things that I did when I, at an early age, just to gain status and to survive in these streets. These cold streets,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, to protect myself. But, you know, leading by example, you know, I've kind of like instilled, you know, inspiration and hope into my younger brothers who are now, you know, on a straight path. You know,
mm-hmm,
that they,
mm-hmm.
you know that they kind of like, you know, almost degenerated to crime. So anything that I can do, you know, to lead by example and be a voice of the voiceless, women and men that are incarcerated and returning home,
mm-hmm,
I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm here. And it's a struggle because, you know, sometimes we're on this front line by ourselves, especially the women who are struggling for our rightful place. You know, because most of these things are spearheaded by, like I said, women who are subjugated to men, you know, and you know, these organizations are established and governed by men, you know, and don't get me wrong, that's their thing, but we have to take our rightful place. We have to stand up as women and address the issues that we face, whether it's in our homes, in prison, in our communities, in our organizations. It is us, and we have
mm-hmm,
to demand
mm-hmm.
the same respect. We can't just be mm-hmm. only out on the front line by ourselves. You know, we want solidarity. We want people to support us. We want people to stand for us. Wow. As well, because now, we stand for everybody else, but we don't want to stand for ourselves.
You know how well I know that one. But let me ask Sister, because this has been something that has really been not only bothering me and puzzling me, but it has me to a point where I'm starting to understand it more than I really want to, and it's this whole thing of reentry. That has become now a business. Like, you know, the whole prison thing. But what I'm finding is that the teachings or the information that is being disseminated to so-called former inmates or returning citizens. I had the opportunity to talk with one of the directors here in Philly, and his position was just really about blaming the former prisoner. You know, making sure, and I noticed that this is part of the kind of scenario that they give the returning citizens, that they should take on the responsibility of their actions. And, you know, in doing so, it'll help them to be a better person and blah, blah, blah. And I'm listening to stuff, and I'm going, okay, now I got that. I can understand that part of it. But when do they tell them the other stuff, like why you really ended up here, and that the system is so designed that, for real, you have no clue as to how you're being set up. So
institutionalized.
I'm asking, in your experience, have you, you know, heard or ran across some of these places that give that spiel?
Oh, I hear it all the time. I've been hearing it since I got released from prison, you know. And to me, it's like a double jeopardy, you know. And it's like, you know, we got a life sentence. Like, you know, I went to jail for a third-degree drug charge. And, you know, this stigma, you know, is still up, you know, with me today, you know. So, you know, and I served my time, you know. And I think that if a person served their time and if they proved themselves, I went from a high school dropout to now a college graduate. I went from a person who, you know, was destroying my community now to a productive citizen. So to tell me, but after 18 years of rehabilitating myself,
right?
Not the system,
right?
You know, I went to school. I struggled for, you know, to rehabilitation and education and all that stuff. I sat in these classes, you know, through, you know, blood, sweat, and tears.
Right.
You know, to rehabilitate myself. But you to tell me now that I've obtained college degrees and certifications and, you know, graduated from, came from a high school dropout to now a college graduate, you telling me that, you know, the doors of opportunities are still closed for me after 18 years?
That's like a
life sentence, you know. So for them to tell me that, I don't claim it, you know.
I don't claim it, but
there are barriers which we fight for every day, and that's why we declared June along with groups, you know, all around the state as National Reentry Awareness Month. And don't get me wrong, I got an issue with that reentry thing, you know, because like you said, what are we reentering to? You know, some of these programs are not fully funded, and it's taxpayer dollars, and my taxpayer dollars are going towards something because they take them every week out of my check. So, you know, I should have a right to reap the benefits of my tax dollars, you know.
Right.
And I say no taxation without representation, but, you know, it's just a whole lot of stuff. But, you know, everything is basically in reentry is policy based. None of this stuff is, you know, spearheaded by citizens who are affected by this, you know. And that's why I say to them, all these millions of dollars that's going into reentry, you know, and all these brilliant minds that I stand before and see that's halfway home, and then these at these halfway houses when I go speak, I said, you know, we're allowing them to capitalize off of our ignorance. Why don't we change this thing and turn this thing around and start developing all the resources that we need to become productive citizens, and we tap into probably our very own dollars. Because if you're a taxpayer,
right,
and if your family pay taxes, you know, you have a right to develop resources that are before us, by us, and nothing about us without us. So we got to kind of like turn this thing around and stop these people who are in this thing for a paycheck, you know. And we got to tell them, listen, you know, we got this. We got this program we want to run for ourselves. We got this training,
right,
this literacy, this mental health support group, this sister support group. We want it to be for us, by us. Because y'all can't, you know, the only person that can liberate us is ourselves. The only person that can redeem us from this stuff is ourselves. If we think the government is going to redeem us fully, we out of our cotton picking mind. We know the government ain't never been designed to pull us out of this thing or out of this situation. This is a big business. Prison
Absolutely.
Is a big business.
Well, we see that, especially given the fact that they are building more and more prisons. As a matter of fact, there was a meeting here in Philly this past week to talk about the building of a new prison that cost, I think, something like $400-something million, yet the school system is in total shambles, and they can't seem to figure out how they're going to pay for the various things for so-called education, but yet they're in the process of building new prisons, and this seems to be a trend that's getting ready to hit all over the country. It's, again, as people probably are aware by now, it's definitely connected to this thing called gentrification and the displacement of people of African descent. So, you know, it's a serious thing that's getting ready to go into effect nationwide. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how this thing unfolds. So one last question. We talked about reentry. We've talked about, you know, so many things. While you were incarcerated, share with us some of the things that you were unfortunately able to see and to, you know, have happen to some degree. You know, share with us about any of the health kinds of problems that exist.
The health problems, I mean, like the medical establishment within all these prisons is very much inadequate. You know, you definitely, if you're a woman, you know, we got special needs and we have to do our annual pap smears and grams and all that type of stuff. And, you know, these prisons are not designed to address women's needs in that manner, you know, and not all any of the prisons, you know. So when it comes down to medical issues and stuff like that, you know, the adequate health care system in prisons is this. If you got to stay there a long time, and I feel and I'm just so depressed about, you know, what's going on with our brother Mumia, and I speak his name every time I go to these halfway houses and tell, we got, you know, a brother that had put his life on the line.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and Sister Asada and a lot of the political prisoners that, you know, have passed away while incarcerated and going through medical apartheid while being incarcerated. I speak their names at these meetings and tell them that, you know, we have people that stood up. And for us to, you know these things, and some of the brothers and sisters know about Mumia, know about the political prisoners, Black Power movement, and all that type of stuff. And I said, if we don't do something you know, to unify and change this thing, and also to talk about, you know, political prisoners and people who are behind bars when we get out. We have betrayed. We have betrayed a generation of freedom fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Today I went and I wore a shirt with Free Sankou Ndinga before he before he made it home, and it had all the political prisoners' name on the back. And, you know,
right.
I wore it just, you know, to show them, you know.
Right.
You know, these we got people who are actually jailed, who put their life on the line struggling for our human rights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you know, and we have to actually, you know, we got to turn this thing around. You know, it got to be the round. We got to use these. When I was incarcerated, you know, I read Asada, you know, and Malcolm and self-empowerment books and stuff like that, you know, and that was like an awakening for me, you know. And from that point on, you know, I came out, you know, and I heard read about, you know, how they established the free breakfast programs and medical
mm-hmm.
services and all that type of stuff. And that kind of like, you know, whoa, that was like an awakening for me. So
mm-hmm.
and then I got involved in all this stuff when I returned home, and I've been here ever since. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
all
and
right.
also addressing not only our political prisoners and prisoners of war, but, you know, all the things that ordinary people go through and while incarcerated.
Every day.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm just
mm-hmm.
passionate about this, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I'm from this. I've transformed from this. And I'm still on my spiritual journey. You know, I'm not where I need to be, but I know it's a struggle. Same elements are out here, you know, and the same oppression and institutionalized racism and gender discrimination and all of that is alive and well today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've been steadfast, and you have served as an inspiration. When I came in contact with you, you know, you my chieftain, you know, and we get frustrated trying to, you know, organize this thing, and it's frustrating sometimes doing it as a one or two woman army, you know, and we're gonna stay the course. We're gonna stay the course because somebody has
no
to
doubt about it.
And I understand
you got that right.
Yes,
you
and I understand.
Right.
Yeah, I understand very clearly when our brother Mumia. You know, when he talk about, you know, being a voice of the voiceless,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, so yep. it's indeed an honor, you know, and I've committed myself to this by hook or crook. You know, some of these folks in politics and some of these folks who have joined these politicians, you know, they try to, like, you know, ostracize and marginalize me up out of these movements because I'm
mm-hmm.
not here to, you know, to sugarcoat anything here. I'm here to tell it real talk, straight with no chasing, you know, because it's real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not here to, you know, sugarcoat any of these politicians and these folks that's in these so-called illusion of power position, you know, they got to do better.
Well,
our people are
I was telling a sister earlier today when she was telling me about the struggle that she was having this week and going to a lot of the meetings for the schools. You know, she's an advocate an activist in dealing with the public school situation. And I told her that, I mean, I understand the need to do that, but at the same time, I also understand that that too is a game. It's a setup. You know,
yeah.
have us spinning our
Probably
wheels
not.
To fight, to try to, you know, make it better in these schools, which are only dumbing our children down more. And so we're fighting, and not just indoctrination, but the whole method of how they teach is just not, you know, for us.
It's not for us to be self-reliant.
Right, but definitely not for us to be self-reliant,
that's for sure.
That too, but the whole method that they use to teach, to instruct, is anti-African, it's anti-black. And so 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a disturbed kind of person, a disturbed child, so in some kind of way. And so, you know, rather than keep fighting for them to do better, which they ain't going to never do, I told the sister that, you know, yeah, you should do something to, you know, at least, you know, try to do something, but all of your time and energy can't go into that. And especially
they gotta think outside the box.
Right, but especially if you're not putting in equal time to have something independent. You put all your time
think outside the box.
Putting all kinds of energy into fighting them and nothing into really working towards building our own. I mean, that just makes no sense. Makes no sense. So, you know, we have to obtain our own educational facilities. And I mean, that's at the least. That is at the least. So, it's, as you indicated, sister, it's a very serious situation. Well, let's see now. It is now almost 11 o'clock. And guess what? Mr. Tracy has not called in. He is not shown up yet. So I'm going to only assume that he is not going to be calling in because he is almost an hour overdue. Mr. Tracy Spysack. So that's real interesting. I guess I will have to address that tomorrow, huh? Well, my sister,
I would call him. He might be snowing somewhere. I don't know.
Well, no. I mean, you know, I'm not going to go through all of that.
Yeah.
You know, people have to be more responsible. And you figure when you are a business person, you have two businesses and this, that, and the other, and you can't make a phone call to say that, you know, whatever. No, I don't think so.
Well, that's another thing also, you know. But I guess if Mr. Bullwinkle called, you know, our leaders would jump over the hoopla. You understand?
Yep.
And this is
no
the disrespect that
it.
We get. We get this type of disrespect. You know, from individuals. Not to say that, you know, maybe something had went down.
Yeah,
you know, and he
had
a valid excuse. But I'm just saying, we deal with the same situation here where, you know, we send letters to, you know, black leadership or whatever, and we get no correspondence back in return, and, you know, late to the meetings, maybe 1 or 2 hours and stuff like that.
Mm.
You know, so... It's not just it's a norm for these folks. So,
Well, yeah. Well, that's going to change.
And then some
that's
folks,
not
going
to be tolerated. We will now expose them in every way possible that they can believe. But anyway, one thing I want to add before we close out, and that is in this issue of disrespect. Again, yesterday at the meeting with Mr. Farrakhan. It was the so-called leaders in Philadelphia that attended this so-called meeting of leaders, for leaders, to get them informed and involved in the upcoming Million Man March 20-year anniversary commemoration. Well, at the end of the presentation, after the minister made his presentation, one of the people here who is one of the heads of the group here that's going to be heading it up, he kept pressing and kept saying, you know, long live the spirit of the Million Man March. And then he started having people to chant that, you know, and they were all chanting it, long live the spirit of the Million Man March. And then when they stopped, Mr. Farrakhan said, and long live the spirit of the Million Woman March.
and the Million
Woman March. It was the funniest thing you wanted to see. Because here this guy had all the people saying,
wrong in the spirit of the Million Man March. And they were all, you know, chanting it, and, you know, all saying it. And then when they got finished, the minister said, and Lord, in the spirit of the Million Woman March. It was quite interesting.
Indeed. Yes, we were. 3 million, probably more, right?
Oh, yeah.
3 million.
Oh, yeah.
3 million, probably more women there.
Oh, yeah.
In the rain.
No doubt. No doubt.
We were in the rain.
So I'm saying that to say that, you know, there are some who are making more efforts to assure that the disrespect, and again, one of the other things that the minister mentioned yesterday was, and I thought this was very interesting, he said that because of the treatment that the religions have on women, how they treat women, how they mistreat women, he said that all religions need to be revamped, all of them, because of their treatment towards women. Now, I was totally kind of like, wow.
Oh, well, you got to understand, you know, and if you read, you know, most of these books were written by, you know, by man, so.
Oh, yeah, but I wasn't expecting him
to
say that. Oh, I'm real clear about the books that are written and all of that, and why, actually. But I certainly was not expecting him as part
of
the presentation for the Million Man March 20th anniversary. I wasn't expecting him to say that all of the religions need to be revamped because of the treatment that they place on the women. I wasn't expecting that one. Uh-uh. You know, it's a good thing, though, needless to say, but definitely very unexpected. But, you know, I was pretty pleased with this, what he was saying. And I think for the most part, it should be a very productive kind of activity that's getting ready to happen. And certainly, you know, leading up to it, you know, people can do a lot of organizing and coordinating for a lot of different things. So, you know, it can be a win-win situation. But, okay, it looks like our guest that we had initially plan for this evening is not calling in for whatever reason. Hopefully he is okay. And I will definitely try to reach out to him tomorrow to kind of find out what happened. And I will report back on Saturday to let people know, you know, what it is that's going on. So, my sister, I certainly thank you for filling in this time. You brought a lot of good information. Let me just ask, before we close out, what about housing? For those brothers and sisters that are so-called formerly incarcerated, are they having difficulties in obtaining housing?
Oh, indeed.
Go through the process that they're supposed to be going through?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, you know, because when speak on that, you know, I was addressing that today because the group of men that we was talking to was the parolees who are halfway home, and they actually are stuck into the halfway house because of the housing issue. And they keep them for 90 days, and then if they don't find housing, it's like up to another 90 days. So they stay 6 months until they get their housing situation. And it's like, you know, you stuck in halfway home facility, which is sort of like minimum lockup until you find housing, and it's terrible, you know. And these people, parole and the Department of Corrections, this is a billion-dollar industry, you know. And all of these resources and these funding should not go towards rearrest, conviction, and courts and all that other stuff, and housing them and all of that. Some of that money needs to be divested into real, tangible resources. And that's the problem that, you know, people returning home faces, because limited resources are allocated, you know, to help them become, you know, productive citizens and to be able to maintain. That's why
the recidivism rate is, at an all-time high, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So if a person who can't think outside the box to develop their own self-reliance mechanism and all that type of stuff, if they're not,
mm-hmm.
If their mindset is not in that type of way, you know, they,
mm-hmm.
they end up back in prison, and sometimes for much harsher crimes than they went in there, you know,
mm-hmm.
due to the fact that they trying to, struggle to survive out here. So it's terrible. And then the women, you know, most of them are in there for nonviolent drug charges, and now they have it where, you know, and the brothers too. If you have a drug conviction, you can't get welfare. And that's like a situation, because, you know, not only are you not being able to get reemployed or employed, and you going
mm-hmm.
through the barriers of employment, but now you're going through the barriers of getting public assistance, emergency assistance, because
mm-hmm.
of your record. So
mm-hmm.
We fighting hard for Ban the Box to be strengthened. These draconian laws that they have that hinder people from becoming productive citizens. We fighting tooth and nail to address it, and it's a struggle. We need everybody who are passionate or serious about, trying to help to restore our human rights, because that's what it is, our human rights, our inalienable
mm-hmm.
rights to
mm-hmm.
better
mm-hmm.
ourselves. You know,
mm-hmm.
we need you.
mm-hmm.
We need
mm-hmm.
you.
Now tell to the folks that don't know, just tell us a little bit about Ban the Box, and then we're going to go to another caller. What's Ban the Box?
Well, Ban the Box, and that's another catch 22 too. But Ban the Box is supposed to be where they take the box off the application. Have you ever been convicted?
Mm-hmm.
Some applications, even though we have it statewide and state to state right now, in
mm-hmm.
some states,
mm-hmm.
It's supposed to give you the opportunity to be employed if you
mm-hmm.
are marketable for that job.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Okay.
So it gives you the first chance to get an interview, but it still allows the employer to still, after the first interview, do a background check.
Right.
So it's
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, something to that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think
mm-hmm.
they should just
mm-hmm.
ban it totally without all these
mm-hmm.
different stipulations. But you know, these businesses, when we went to go fight for it, they fought back. So there was
right.
a compromise in order to get
right.
you know, this law passed, to at least give the person the opportunity. So now
mm-hmm.
it's called the Opportunity Compete Act.
Mm-hmm.
So you're able to compete for that, but for the
mm-hmm.
job, you know,
mm-hmm.
and still, you know, they can still check your record in. But they do it anyway. You know, they look at
mm-hmm.
your name and they discard your resume anyway. So,
wow.
You know, employment
okay.
discrimination, you know, it's like a tenfold here. You know, they use different mechanisms to discard people from employment anyway. You know,
right.
so it's,
right.
it's just a feel-good type of law that we have. So it's crazy.
Okay. Sis, I want you
the
to stay right here.
The best thing we need to do is develop our own, like you said.
Absolutely. I want you to stay right there, because I think we have a caller who might have a question or a comment for you. Before we do, we want to remind everyone that during the course of the summer, we'll be giving you out information on places where you will be able to drop your books off at, meaning the Me Woman Movement will be implementing officially in October our Books Not Bondage campaign. And what we'll be doing over the summer, and starting this summer, and actually, you know, for as long as we possibly can, we're going to start collecting books, the books that you no longer want that are specifically black books, but also it can be self-help books. We want to be able to start going into the prisons to have study sessions with the sisters. And as this sister just said to you, one of the things that helped her to get through that time period was reading about Sister Sada, about Malcolm X. Well, we want to help our sisters to be able to do the same thing or something similar, and that is to provide them with literature, with information that is going to help to strengthen them, both while they're in there and coming out. And because some of us with the Me Woman movement are, in fact, obtaining the credentials, for lack of a better word, that will allow us to go into the prison to be able to hold study sessions and other types of things. We'll be telling you more about that very soon, but for now, we're going to be collecting books. We'll be giving you locations where we'll be having different events, not just in Philadelphia, but in other cities as well. And with that said, we're also setting up locations where ultimately we will have our own Million Woman Library, so that we'll be able to have in the community our own library for those who want to do studying, independent studying, for those who want their books in a safe location. This is one of the reasons why we're working so hard to establish buildings for our movement, so that we have the proper locations to be able to do and put the things that we've been talking about, the documents, the keeping of our history. These things are so very important. So, again, starting this summer, one of the first phases is being able to obtain books and other materials that will help to edify, uplift, and empower, and inspire. So we'll be giving you more information about that as we proceed. So let's do this. We're going to go to one of our callers, and you're at 1436. And 1436, your mic is open.
Yeah. I want to ask a question in terms of the laws that they was passed in terms of welfare, what have you deal with. Wasn't that passed under Bill Clinton?
Indeed.
Okay.
Yes.
Because he came up with that three strikes you out.
Right.
The reason why I ask, because they pushing his wife down our throat, and they're going to use these Negro leaders to push Hillary Clinton all of,
right,
over the country. You know, and she's no different from her husband.
Wow.
Well,
if you check out the bills that came down under the Clinton administration, those was the bills that was very, very much detrimental to black folks specifically.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of laws.
That's a good analogy. Yeah.
Crack, you know, cocaine ratio, where white people who were dealing in the weight of cocaine didn't get jail time, where his brother or sister on the corner sell that crack, they got a lot of time. Someone got life sentences. They're still in jail. And then he's on All Senior Hall playing saxophone. He's talking about he's our first black president. I know he was heard of more than Ronald Reagan did, really, some of the moves he made.
Yeah, and that welfare to work program that came under, you know, the welfare reform, that's
right,
a sham, because there's no work.
Right.
You know, a female go down there and try to get on a welfare to work program, and they put them in all these different kind of inhumane job sites and stuff like that. Even the brothers, you know, who get on welfare, you know, they ain't really trying to get them to work. You know, it's the humanizing type of work, type of job, and it's just crazy. And to get them into jobs that are a livable wage, you know, we fighting for that right now. You know, we want the minimum wages to go up, which is a struggle here. We fighting for, you know, $15 to be the minimum wage. And not only that, you know, the laws on the books that's supposed to, the first source hiring and all that type of stuff, And most of these communities, we trying to get them to enforce our black politicians today to enforce the residency hiring and local requirements on these jobs in these corporations that they not meeting the requirements based on, you know, ordinance that's in effect. So it's a struggle.
And see, Clinton also signed that NAFTA agreement with a lot of jobs went out of North America.
Overseas. Yeah, overseas.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we obviously got some serious situations. So let me just ask, because you gave a lot of good information, and I'm really going back to the ban the box piece. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There was another question I wanted to raise to you or bring to your attention. I just got noticed a little while ago that I think it's Nebraska has now prohibited the death penalty. So with that said,
they're
prohibiting it. They're prohibiting meaning they will no longer have a death penalty in Nebraska. Okay, so I think now there may be 30 states that don't have the death penalty. So what do you think about that?
Well, you know, I think eye for eye, you know, of course, life for life. But, you know, I know they use that death penalty to basically, assassinate innocent people. And I think it needs more of, like, an oversight, you know, an independent oversight over the death penalty. But I do believe that people who, if somebody murdered my child or my mother or my sister or brother or my friend or my chieftain, you know, I think they deserve their life to be taken. Trust me.
Yeah,
you know,
but the thing about But I think the problem with that is, and I agree, believe me, I mean, for the most part, I definitely agree, but from my vantage point, that should be something that as a people we do or determine, not the system.
No, I don't think it should be system developed.
Right.
You know, just like with this civilian police review board stuff, you know, they need to get rid of that Faulkner Act because the people should be determining who they want as independent monitors, and that would be such as themselves, you know, having community control over the police.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
so that Faulkner Act, even though, you know, what's happening now with that CCP, you know, I think police reform and police accountability needs to be addressed, but I don't think politicians should have their hands in it because then the politics get all involved in it, you know.
That's why
I
Well, we know that it's really about business now. This is what the prison system is about, and it's going to be about, as we said, they're building more and more prisons. And certainly the laws, the so-called laws that's being issued are becoming very, very interesting. People can be arrested and detained indefinitely now, as opposed to, you know, a few years ago it was, they could only be detained for, I think, 72 hours, and then they would have to be formally arrested. Well, now you can be detained for any period of time.
Yeah, they have it with that Patriot Act where you could be detained for whatever reason, and they don't have to, you know.
Right. They don't have to formally charge you.
They don't have to say a word. They could take you off somewhere and tell you about it 10 years later why they arrested you. So with that Patriot Act, you know, it's crazy. Then you have these other things that's going on, protesters, you know, they calling us terrorists now. It's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy, y'all.
But well,
we gotta
as we know.
We got to stand. We got to stand steadfast and fight it by hook or crook. Can't let them, you know, we will not bow down to them.
Well, family, we are going to get ready to close this segment out. I want to thank Sister Munira for sharing this time with us and really giving us some insight into, of course, the prison system, the prison industrialized complex, what is going on a lot when folks are coming out, some of the things that they have to deal with and go through. I think it's really important that we begin to understand it a little better because it's really designed to break our spirit. That's what it's really about. It's about breaking our spirits. These people know who we are. They know what is within us, and their job has been to take that away from us, to suppress it, and so forth and so on. And yep, and they're doing a pretty good job because for those who are not incarcerated behind those steel bars, many of us are incarcerated in many other kinds of ways. It's not the same thing, of course, but they're getting folks on lockdown in some other kind of ways. So we better be more mindful, more careful, and more prepared to be in a resistant state of mind. Sister Munira, I want to thank you again.
Yes, yes.
I think we still have Moo with us. Moo, did you have any more comments or questions for us? Okay, maybe we don't have it with us. Okay, well, let me see. I think we're going to close out, and before we do, as indicated, we've been playing in the background music by Art Blakely because, again, this is Black Music Month, and I found Art Blakely to be really not only inspirational but interesting person for you to share with you. Name Arthur Blakely, born. Now check this out. I found this kind of interesting. Born October 11th, 1919, and he made transition October 16th, 1990. So I just found that was real interesting. First of all, that October 16th was, of course, the original date for the Million Man March, even though he made transition in 1990. But it just seems like most of his numbers are almost the same. October 11, 1919 was his Earth Day. October 16, 1990 was his transition date. That just, you know, I deal with numerology, so I just found that a little interesting. But the other thing about him, of course, is brilliancy, his capability of the drum. For example, listen. Well, that was a little bit of him. Art Blakely, I mean, played with Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, Billy Einstein, the Jazz Messengers with his own group, and, of course, he played with Horace Silver. You know, this was probably way before all of our listeners' time, or maybe a few. But the point being is some music that, I mean, it goes on and on. It has no age. It has no time. Art Blakely is one of those people. His spiritual name that he ended up getting after he became Muslim was Abdullah Ibn Muhanima. And again, we're talking about Art Blakely, one of the pioneers in bebop, and certainly one who just made such a tremendous headway in the music, in the jazz field, with his capability of playing again the drums. He had just a certain kind of ability where, keep in mind, it just wasn't, the drums was not an instrument that was put a lot of attention on, primarily, especially in most genres of music, primarily because it was known that the drum was a very important instrument for Black people, for African people, particularly the fact that the drum is like our homeland instrument, and these people knew that. So they, you know, would oftentimes kind of isolate the drum impact in their music. But people like Art Blakey and Max Roach and a few others, they were able to really fine-tune the art of being a drummer. And as a result, you know, was able to just provide a lot of insight, a lot of spirit. And so, again, you know, we salute Art Blakey. We are thankful that he was amongst us. And, again, we will be featuring other artists during the course of this month to share with you. Of course, John Coltrane will definitely be in that mix at some point. But, again, tonight we have been playing pieces from Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. So with that said, family, we are going to close this segment out. Hopefully, Brother Tracy is okay. We will try to contact him tomorrow to, you know, to make sure he is. And we know that sometimes things do come up, but at any rate, we will have him maybe on in the near future, but we'll definitely give you a report either way. Again, we want to thank Sister Manier for taking this time and helping us fill in this time period with, again, some very powerful information about the prison industrialized complex and other things relevant to what is known as the so-called penal system. Well, we're going to close out, and again, we thank you, and we're going to leave you, as we oftentimes greet you, and it's in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. Before we close out, we want to remind you to tune in to our weekly program, our regular program, which is on Saturday at 10:30 p.m. We will be here again, as usual, for our New Day Resurrection Liberation regular weekly program. So continue to pass the word. And then, of course, again, on Sunday, you can join us for The Truth of the Matter, which is aired here in Philadelphia, 900 a.m. Word, WRD. We're here at 8 o'clock, live to 9 o'clock, and you can catch us online. If you're not in Philly, you can certainly just go to the website and you hear us crystal clear online, okay? And we'll be giving you more information about that on Saturday as well. I'll give you some insight into the program for this week that will be coming up. It's going to be titled Black Love, and so, again, we'll give you some insight into what that's going to be about on our Saturday program. At any rate, until next time, we'll leave you again as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there can never be any real peace, meaning Hotep, until there is definitely Ma'at, which in this case we're talking about justice. So until next time, promote to the Shinda. Together we shall win.
Indeed. Good night.